You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. So this will probably be my last episode for a while. My due date is next week, so I'm going to be meeting this baby soon and taking a break. If you haven't already, take a look back through the archives. There's so many great conversations with wonderful artists. Please take advantage. My guest today is Raymond J. Lee. Raymond is a wonderful actor and singer. We met a while ago through my husband. His open and beautiful spirit made such an impression on me. I was curious to hear about his experiences working in musical theater, among other genres. And especially since Frankie and I are about to become parents, I wanted to talk to him about his experiences being a parent and juggling his career as a working performer. So I hope you enjoy the 125th episode of The Compass.
You know, as an artist, I feel like once a month, I call it actor's PMS, where I'm like, I can't do it anymore.
It's a cycle.
It's a cycle. You know, you go, because, you know, you're always bearing your soul at each audition, and like to get rejections, you just feel like it just kind of weighs in on you and you try and get rid of it. So once a month, it always feels like, how much longer can I do this? Should I try and get another job? But I always remind myself, especially as a dad, I look at Ella and I say, I have to, like, this is what I love to do. This is like my dream, and I have to work my ass off. And so I always just kind of slap myself. Ray,
get it together.
Get it together. Stop complaining. Yeah. You're good. You are doing good. And you have to show your daughter that you have to work hard for your dreams. And so in a way, she kind of propels me out of the dark side.
Yeah.
and then the occasional, like, I tell my husband, just can you pet me and tell me I'm pretty and pretty and talented, and he'll do that. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah. You're like, I know this is a little ridiculous, but yeah, it's what I need.
Yeah. And I think with actors too, because like you rarely get feedback, you know, of like why the audition didn't happen. And so you get to go to the dark side of maybe it was this, maybe it was that, maybe it's how I look. Am I too fat? Am I too thin? Is it because I'm Asian? And so I always have to shut those voices out and be like, no, it could be something as simple as, you know, they hired a star, you know? So I always have to kind of keep myself in check.
Yeah. It is funny how often that cycle repeats. You're right. It can really be like that monthly thing.
Yeah. Even Robbie's like, oh no, can you give me warning? Because I'm like,
yeah,
you know.
And it's a strange thing to have to get used to, because you're like, okay, mm-hmm, I see that this isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I have to, I go through it again and again, and I always come out the other side. Such a bizarre reality to be like, oh, this is a reality of my industry.
Yeah, it's like a bizarre
this
profession
mental thing I have to go through.
Which is why, like, I can always see, like, you know, when stars have breakdowns or like they have to go away and like, you know, go to like Tibet and like meditate for a month. It's funny to like know that it also happens on like that level. You know, I feel like we all go through that as artists and actors and like different points in our careers, and it's always about navigating. I feel like a lot of it is navigating the dark side.
Yeah.
You know, some people turn to drugs and, you know, or food, and I always have to navigate my dark side healthily. And I do that with family. I do that with going to an amusement park or going to a movie and giving myself a break, you know, because we work so hard with all the different facets of being an actor. I just have to give myself a break.
Do you feel like you've always been able to do that? Like, focus on the healthy ways to deal with it? Or has it been something that your process has evolved on?
I think it's definitely evolved, like navigating the dark side. That sounds like a podcast, like Ray's podcast. Because in the beginning, I did it in very unhealthy ways. I think because I was young, I didn't know how to do it. You know, like my first 2 years in, it was food. It was always right. food. I remember getting rejections, and I was bought out of a show once, and I remember just getting a call from the director and saying, hey, we've gone another direction. We're unfortunately going to buy you out. You're not going to be part of the process. And I ended up buying, like, from takeout, like, Thai food, pizza, and Italian food, and eating it all in one go. And it was like, that's just how I dealt with it.
Yeah.
And, but now, if that ever happens, I, you know, give myself the break. I might have a bite of chocolate, and then I go play with my daughter, or I treat myself to a movie. I find healthier ways to kind of process, you know, the negative stuff that happens to us. But it definitely has evolved.
Can we talk a little bit about your daughter and how becoming yeah. a parent has changed you as an artist or changed your approach to this
yeah.
career?
It's...
Because she's four.
Yes, she's 4 years old. Mm-hmm. She just turned four last month. I missed her birthday because I was out of town, so I bought her lots of presents.
You've been making up for it ever since you got back.
Daddy guilt. We had our gotcha day, and I was like, I'm buying you a cake and Levain Bakery cookies.
Oh my God.
They're so good.
They're the best.
No, it has changed me for the better, being a dad and being an actor. Because I think in the beginning, I admit I was very self-absorbed being an actor in this business. It was always, what can
it's
I do?
Easy to do.
Yeah, because you're the product, you know, and how do you maintain your product? But being a dad, like, there's something just more important than me
yeah.
in this world that I have to focus on. And if I ever have a bad audition, she is always ready to give me a kiss and a hug, and it makes me realize there are more important things out there than, you know, than that one line I could have gotten, you know, that I focus so hard all day on. And it's made me a better actor. There's so much more, as you guys will find out. There's so soon. You experience a lot. There's almost this like crazy learning curve. Even like the first year of being a parent, like the love you feel, the different emotions you feel, they're at such a deeper level. The connections you feel, even between y'all, the connections just get more intense and deeper. And you reach this new level of understanding emotions that helps you,
right.
you know?
And your imagination for what's possible when you're inhabiting a character is
yeah.
that much deeper.
Like, you know, you might see even like a part like protecting somebody, you know, you go in for a part, but you don't really, you feel a different level of it when you have this baby that you're always constantly protecting.
Yeah.
And so you're able to, you know, like transfer that. But yeah, it's made me more grounded too, I think.
Were there any resources that you guys used when you were going through the adoption process that mm-hmm. helped you figure it out? Or like, did you run into any roadblocks because you were an artist, like proving your income and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that you had to deal with?
We were lucky because, so I was in Mamma Mia for a good 4.5 years.
Oh my God, 4.5 years.
Yes, that's where we got the adoption fees. Thank you, Mamma Mia. But we had...
So that was kind of the perfect time.
Oh, perfect time.
Yeah.
Actually, like, during Mommy is when I met my husband. And okay. we had this, you know, long conversation that I wanted to be, I wanted to be a dad. And he was like, you know, I could get on board with it. Because when I first met Robbie, he didn't want to be a parent. And so we had a huge discussion, like, year into the relationship. And he was like, you know what? I could be on board. And then we kind of, like, it slowly started, like, budgeting. Because we knew adoption fees or surrogacy fees. We knew that those are the two angles as being a gay dad. Like, right. is either fostering... adoption or surrogacy, and we made the decision that there were just so many kids out there, and you know, surrogacy was so expensive, but we had friends who had gone through several rounds of it, and then we had a castmate in Mamma Mia who had gone through open adoption, which is basically still having a relationship with the birth mom or birth dad, and we saw how beautiful it was, and that's the angle we wanted to go. So resource-wise, it was cool to have another castmate go through that entire process.
Yeah, I'm sure that helped so much.
Oh, so much. They were there for advice all the time. Yeah. And so we went through that agency. And then Ella came home after we had left Mamma Mia. We're doing research during Mamma Mia, and then I did Anything Goes After, and we mm-hmm. kept doing research, and that's when we started the process. We had the applications and this and that. But we always kept going back to my castmate at Mamma Mia, just like, how did you do the application process? How did you deal with the waiting? Because mm-hmm. the waiting for us was hard.
Because how long did that process end up taking?
It took about 2 years.
Yeah.
And for my castmate mom, Mia, it took about 2 months. They got their daughter like almost right away. But for us, and I can attribute it to audition, callback, final callback, book the job, is what the adoption process is like.
Yeah.
Like you go through your first round of auditions and then you get a callback. And then our final callback, you actually meet the birth mom. And so we had about 3 or 4 final callbacks, but we never booked the job. And because I was an actor, I literally was like, okay, I'll believe it when I book it. But my poor husband,
right,
you know,
he didn't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah, so each time he was like, oh my God, what if this is the one? And I always have to tell him, hey, you can't have your heart set on it. We have to protect ourselves. Yeah. And then we actually had an instance where we were picked. And then they kept their child.
Right.
And that was really hard. And that was at about the 2 year mark. And we didn't know if it was ever going to happen. But then Ella's birth mom picked us right after that. And it all happened like it was supposed to.
And then you got her. I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording. But you got her, like, you found out like 24 hours.
Yeah. We had about a 2 week period where... they're like, you know, this birth mom is interested in you. She's looking at your file. It could happen. But because we had just had that experience, we're like, sure, whatever. I'll believe it when it happens. And then it was on a Wednesday at 4 o'clock. I remember I was at Schmackery's eating cookies. And Robbie was at work. And we got a call at like 4 o'clock. And they said, hey, you've been chosen. She signed the final documents. And you pick your daughter up tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
And how old was she at that point?
She was 6 weeks old.
Okay.
Yeah, she'd gone right into interim care, like, right away. Her birth mom had her in the Hamptons, which we always joke about. We're like, our daughter is so fancy. She was born in Southampton? Oh, my God, this girl, this queen.
She's going to want to go back.
I'm like, oh, no.
Take me to my homeland of the Hamptons.
Of the Hamptons. And, you know, I was eating caviar instead of having formula when I first was born. And then we... It was a very trippy process because we had heard when you first, you know, when you go to meet your child, you have about an hour or two of paperwork, additional paperwork signing, and the birth mom and her social worker are in another room signing their paperwork and kind of doing their therapy, last kind of minute therapy session. But people were running late, so we got there, and within about 10 minutes, Ella came around the room, and we both, you know, there's a video out there that people have seen, and we just broke down, started crying, and we knew that she was our little one, and the rest is history. And there is an initial 30 days once the baby's placed that the birth mom could possibly try and, you know, maybe claim the
child. Which makes sense, but that must have been nerve-wracking.
It was nerve-wracking. Having had met her birth mom, we knew that that probably wasn't going to happen, and also because she had already been out of the womb for 6 weeks, we knew that was a...
She had some time to think about it.
She had some time to think about it. But it was scary. So by day 31, it was like, okay, whew, like rejoice. Yeah, our shoulders kind of loosened up a little bit even more.
I want to talk about so many different things, but I hope you don't mind if I ask you some more parenting things.
Yes.
Just because it's obviously on my mind right now.
Yeah, I'm such an open book. Totally. ask away.
Well, I know you've been dealing with this lately, but like how have you guys been, since your husband's not in the industry, like how have you guys been dealing with the long distance when you're looking out of town? And
you know, it's...
Or like
it's,
having opposite hours if you're doing a show in the city, like how has that been for you?
I'm fortunate to have had a bunch of experience with that too. So feel free to ask me if because I talk in tangents, let me know if you need to like gear me toward another angle. Having just been out of town, I'm lucky because my husband is so supportive. And he understood that this was like a big show. It was a big creative team. It was a new musical. It was a great part for me because I get to have a whole song. It was political. So I get to kind of have my own political therapy doing the show.
Which we all need, right?
Which we all need. You know, I played a vice president who loves guns. And, you know, like in this giant scene. And so he knew that this was a big project for me. So he was ready to be single dad for a good 3 months.
Wow.
And we talked about it. And I'm very fortunate because I know other, you know, actor parents who are in relationships where they don't have that luxury because, you know, maybe they, you know, their spouse just isn't able to, you know, Because my husband has his full-time job, and they're also flexible, so we know how lucky we are.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, he could take a day off here and there and work from home. But yeah, and like, I mean, we also, auditions will come up too, where it's, hey, Ray, this is another out-of-town regional gig of, you know, of Guys and Dolls.
Right.
And for 2 months in, you know, Texas or Chicago, and we just have to, you know, a lot of the times I have to say no, just because... It's hard for our family.
Yeah, and if it's not something that you feel particularly passionate about, is it really worth trading that time?
Yeah, and of course I would love to play these roles. I would love to play a Seymour in Little Shop. But, you know, it's just like, oh, but I have to think about my family and see the toll that it takes on them, me being out of town. So it's a tricky river to navigate these days. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had a crystal ball telling me which project I should focus on.
Right. Well, because that's the other thing, because you don't know, like, especially when you're working on new material, you don't know, like, okay, is this an investment I need to make because then it's going to go on and eventually come to New York, and or is this going to be the end of the road?
Yeah. You know, actually, there was a situation before, before I took Soft Power, where I had the chance to be in an ensemble in a new Broadway show. Mm-hmm. And so we were just, it was eating at me, because I would be an ensemble member and we'd have that security.
That paycheck. Yeah,
that paycheck. It was guaranteed. Yeah. Like, and this one was probably, it was going to be a hit and going to run. But then we were also at the point of my career where, having just finished Groundhog Day, it was like, do I go back into the ensemble or do I try and
take a
leap? Yeah, and try and do the principal work and try and do the parts that get me out there. So that was a huge family discussion. My husband did say, if you take this ensemble gig, we can go to Hawaii. Like, we can even go to Disney World.
Yeah, there are pluses.
There are pluses, yeah. And it was a hard decision because it was good people. But ultimately, too, there's just like, I had to follow my gut. And that's a thing that it's juggling, like following your gut, but also following your brain, following your heart. It's this juggle that you find as a parent. And ultimately, I had to follow Soft Power and see what happens from that, you know. But it's tricky. It's very tricky.
Yeah, and you have to have that open communication with your partner.
Yeah, too. And he was very supportive, and I'm very lucky. But even now, too, like, there's been jobs or auditions I've gone in for, like, you know, even off-Broadway stuff that doesn't pay as much. And fortunately, I just have to, you know, even if I have to cater or work or temp, I just have to be able to make, you know, at least my $500 a week so I can pay for the daycare. And that's something that we both decided that I have to
bring in. Which is sad to think that some off-Broadway gigs, I know that, you know, there's a big movement right now to get better payment for that, but it's sad that you can't say that about all of those opportunities.
Yeah, and it's hard because if I didn't have a family, I would be at those auditions in a heartbeat for these amazing projects. But, you know, after you pay your agent and your manager, and ultimately it's like, I just can't, it would take a toll on our family. So I have to buckle up.
I was going to ask about the day job thing. Like, what are some of the things that you've found over the years to kind of patchwork together when you're in between better paying gigs?
You know, I've been lucky to temp. Mm-hmm. I have a couple agencies that I'm with. And so they get me out there, and I always ask about flexibility. And I find the jobs that I've been very lucky, knock on wood, that I can take like a 2-hour lunch break and go to an audition or go to a dance call. And
are they usually like short-term assignments?
Like a week-long assignment, like 10, you know, 10 to 5, and they pay by the hour. And usually it's just like data input. And so because I can type really fast and I work really fast, they're like, yeah, you know, go ahead, do your thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've been very lucky with that.
Good.
But then we'll see. And then, of course, I'm on unemployment and trying to figure out how to, once it runs out, I'll be like, okay, now I have to really reach out to the temp agencies right now and
figure out the next thing.
Figure out the next thing.
How long have you been in New York now?
I moved here in 2004. Yeah. Okay. Graduated.
I guess that 1 year before I did.
Oh, 2005. Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to school, Lee?
I went to the University of Evansville.
Okay.
In Indiana. And then I came here and went to Juilliard, where Frankie and I met.
Oh, that's so cool. I just did a reading of a play and at Lincoln Center, and Juilliard is right next door. And so we have a couple people from Juilliard.
Like current students?
Yeah, just graduated.
Aw.
And it's, gosh, it's so, I feel like I've learned just from them, like their processes, if that makes any
sense.
I'm
sure they're deep in their process. If they just graduated, they're probably like, they're in
like,
it.
They're deep, but they're like my friend now, Fala, she's deep in the process, but she's also so down to earth about it. And it's so cool to like watch them go back and forth.
That's
like,
great.
So
it was really special to go to school like in Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
Like, we just went back and saw a show at, LCT3, and
oh, cool.
Whenever I'm there, I'm just like, oh my God, I spent 4 years basically in this, like, such a public cultural center, but I walk through it and I picture like living in the dorms my first year.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Do you have like, are there like alumni events you ever go back and like, you know, talk?
Yeah, we go back, or like they're very sweet about letting me use space sometimes to like record the podcast or do stuff like that.
So oh, good.
Go back and see people.
I would love to go back to grad school because I was a film major.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was started up pre-med chemistry because my Korean parents were like, doctor. And then
from my internet snooping, this was Northwestern.
Right? Yeah, okay. Northwestern. Go Cats. And I only had about a year of acting because I was in the music theater program.
Okay.
And so, God, I wanted so much more like...
You didn't act in high school or anything?
I did. It was like, you know, it was like musicals. So I was very schmackty when I first entered Northwestern because it was like jazz hands and like... expressive faces, and you know,
right.
You know,
that's
that
what
like,
high school's for.
Yeah, you know, sequin vests,
like, show choir.
And so, a lot of actually, like, of my adult careers has been like stripping away that like very ostentatious acting that I thought was what people wanted, you know, and slowly kind of getting to like bringing yourself more into your parts to make it more real, which has helped, and it's been fun to like, I mean. I learn a lot by watching other people, like, you know, so for the past week, watching my friend Fala, just how she works and how she brings herself into a role has always been very eye-opening, and I've learned a lot. But yeah, that 1 year of acting class, it hooked me at Northwestern. I'm like, oh, I want to go to grad school. I just don't have the time these days, but.
Well, I mean, if you're working, then.
Yeah, I'm like.
Screw it.
I'm doing something right, hopefully.
So what were you interested in film when you decided to switch to that? And like, is that something you're still interested in?
I am. I mean, it was me being such a passive aggressive Korean son.
you're like, I'm going to do this.
I was like, I told my parents when I'd switched, I was going to be an entertainment lawyer. And so if I switch to film, they won't, you know, put too much of a hissy fit.
Right. It's like pre-law.
Yeah, pre-law. And so they're like, oh, okay. Okay, from doctor to lawyer. Okay, good. Oh, entertainment? And, you know, so I was a film major, and I actually worked at MTV when I first moved here for a good year. I was working on, like, the VMAs and the movie awards. And so...
It's like in production, kind
of. In production. And so they saw this, you know, and my parents never really asked because they saw me working in entertainment, and they thought generally the next step was me studying for my LSATs and going to law school. But then on the sides, I was sneaking to auditions. Like not telling them. And luckily, Mamma Mia was one of those auditions I snuck out to. And I remember I got the call that I booked the company on like the last day of our movie awards edit. I was working on a show. At the edit, I got the call. And then it was like, hey, okay, I'm not going to be available because I'm going to go over to Mamma Mia right next door on 51st Street.
Oh my God.
So it was
pretty fast.
I mean, it was about, like what, a it was year about two year. Years, actually. It was about a year at MTV, and then I took a kind of a year off to kind of really pursue it. And then I found out how hard it was and decided to go back to MTV as a PA and kind of juggle both. So I was working at MTV, but also going to auditions on the side. And then that's when it kind of happened in 2006. I found out I booked Mamma Mia, and... the rest is history. Yeah.
So the film thing was really kind of a cover.
Totally a cover. Although, I mean, I'd learned a lot of skills. Like, I mean, I'm able to, you know, cut my own reel. I'm able to work with, like, GarageBand for voiceover auditions. And
That basic understanding of all that stuff.
Yeah, even Photoshop. Like, we had to take Photoshop classes, Final Cut classes. I learned how to work a camera. So it was actually being behind the camera helped me figure out what to do in front of the camera. Nice. So it was a good education.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but one of the things I usually ask about is, like, what does your family make of you deciding to be an artist for your career?
Yeah.
So, like, since you're well past that transition phase now, what do they kind of make of your...
They are so much supportive now. Before, they were not supportive. They were always like, when are you going to get the real job? How are you going to make it? especially being Asian American.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure.
So much pressure. And they were like, there are no Asian faces out there. There's no room for you. How are you going to make it? Especially in theater.
I don't want to say they're not wrong, but that is an intimidating thing. Like, there isn't enough representation.
Yeah. I'm just always so stubborn that I was like, there has to be, you know, like, right. I'm going to show them what I do. There's like, you know, I could be in Rent. Like, I remember thinking like, you know, there are Asian faces out there. Sure. They might be like, you know, playing the dry cleaner in this movie or this and that, but there has to be room. There has to be growth. And I want to be one of the people that kind of maybe changes minds. So I was very stubborn with that. And I think they've learned now too, because my mom's a pharmacist and my dad's an engineer.
Oh, okay.
So they had no idea like how artists made a living.
Yeah.
And now that they see it and they're like, oh, okay, I guess you can. But now their questions are always like, well, why haven't you booked a series regular on a TV show? How hard could it be?
My dad is also an engineer, and those sound very familiar to me.
So like, do they ask you like, why aren't you doing a TV show right now?
You're gonna be the next Nicole Kidman. That's what they understand.
Because it's so easy.
Yeah, why don't you get another agent?
Yeah. Don't you just walk up to the agency and, you know, I saw Coyote Ugly. You just put your tape in the office and they'll sign you.
I mean, it's hard when you're coming from a different world and you don't understand how it works.
I think my mom asked me, one of her last questions was,
it's hard
always
for both parties, the child and the parents.
Yeah, which is why we always get each other. And I feel like we always tell each other, our parents, like the same stories and the same excuses just to kind of keep them happy and at bay.
Do they have a chance to see a lot of the stuff here and now?
They do. They actually came to see Soft Power.
Oh, great.
And they saw Groundhog Day. Anything Goes they didn't see because we were going through a bit of a period where it was also me being an actor and them realizing I was going to be full-time acting. And it was also me being gay. So it like kind of hit together at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, but then they're starting to come around. The gay thing is just baby steps, but the acting thing, they've actually been very supportive. They actually put more pressure on me than I feel like anybody else now. It's like, oh God. Like, you don't have anything coming up? Why?
It's like, believe me, I'll let you know.
Yeah. I'm trying, Mom, Dad. I'm trying. I'm going through the auditions. Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard. Are you an only child?
I have a younger brother, and he's a business consultant.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But in when we were growing up, I was supposed to be the doctor, and he was going to be the dentist. And... yeah, and he broke away from what my parents wanted him to do, which is
right,
good for him.
Right, even though to us it seems like, oh, you still went down a traditional career path.
Yeah.
But
he's happy being...
He understands that a little bit with you.
He does. Like, he understands, like, we both had so much pressure to, like, fit these molds, and we both tried to fit the molds, and then we both went through a crazy rebellious period. And then he found what he wanted to do, and I found what I wanted to do. So we're just happier people now. And he, you know, he's engaged. He lives in Los Angeles, so he's kind of doing his thing. So I'm very proud of him. He's come a long way since we've both been like angsty college students.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com.
I wanted to talk a little bit about, because I saw that you've worked on a ton of new shows. How have you found over the years, like, to invest yourself in those workshops and like not let your heart break when they do or don't become something, or they do or don't take you with them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you enjoy about that part of the business?
Because
it just seems like it's such a huge part of, like, the new musical
mm-hmm.
world
mm-hmm.
is helping to develop the new work.
I love it. Yeah. Actually, tonight I'm doing a reading of a new musical that I've been involved with before called The Remarkable Journey of Prince Jen. Hopefully it comes to a theater soon. Plug. I love creating because also being Asian American, like that's where I can change minds.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, you can really be a voice in the room.
Yeah, I can be a voice in the room. And I love going in because, you know, because there's been certain moments, like even like in Groundhog Day when I went in, like the part in the West End had been Caucasian, the part of Ralph. And I got to go in and that was also to the testament of the creative team where they saw every actor for the part. They didn't see just skin color, you know? And so creating these new musicals, like I love to go in, show them what I do, and hopefully there's a place for me in the musical. And then hopefully I also get to show them what Asian actors do, you know, these days, and open up their minds and make them see past skin color.
Mm-hmm.
I just also love creating. It's so much fun. It's such a different beast to help create a role versus being a replacement and trying to, like, you know, slowly and like without any ripples, like fit into a cast in a show.
Yeah.
And they're two different beasts.
Tricky.
Yeah, very tricky. Both take different skill sets. But yeah, and it's fun. Like, I mean, it's very scary also creating a role. Like with Soft Power, a lot of it was like, what do I do? What choice should I make?
Right, it could really go any way.
Yeah, it could go any way. And also the creative team is also kind of like, you know, they are kind of waiting to see what choice you make too, because they're also creating. And sometimes they get stumped.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time is I've learned to make bold choices because it might be the wrong choice, but then it helps me gear toward the right choice. So I've learned with new musicals, just make the choice, make a bold choice, stick with it and see how the
right.
team responds.
Instead of getting stuck in that place of like, I'm going to be timid because I want them to like me.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. Yeah. Also, because when you replace, you know, there's other castmates and they have done the show longer than you and they kind of like how they do the show. So you want to
make
sure.
Right, when there's multiple workshops and you're joining the fifth one or whatever.
Yeah, if I'm like the fifth replacement of like Bach, like, and someone has been there since the original company, I want to make sure that, you know, I still want to bring myself into the part, but I also want to make sure I don't, you know, create this huge ripple effect in the lake and make other castmates unhappy. I want to make sure that I come in as a company member, you know, and not just as like a, I'm here, let's do it my way. But I enjoy creating new work. And I just have to say, like, I've done a lot of musicals, but I'm trying to get more into plays, and plays are hard. Like, wow. Yeah. Cause I feel like you're always like fully invested throughout the play versus in musical theater. I feel like you get breaks.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're like, great. This is the acting portion. And now I got to focus on the dance portion and like the singing portion. Like, you know, you're still acting, but you like, it's like, the principal gear now is focusing on the voice and the singing and telling the story through singing. But with plays, it's like from start to finish, you're like a character and you have to make these like choices and like be in it. So I found that plays are hard.
I love that it's all one thing, but we can be so involved in separate parts of it. To me, musicals are so intimidating.
Really?
And to you, you're like, plays are so different.
Have you done a lot of musicals, Lee? Or like, would you ever do one?
No, not since high school.
Yeah.
I've done some plays with music, but yeah. I'm not a musical theater singer at all.
You know, I have to say, like, for me, I'm more of a singer, mm-hmm. and I never thought I'd do musical theater. Like, the fact that I've tap danced in two shows is still like, what? Why did they hire me? I don't tap dance. So.
Right, you didn't come from, like, a dance background.
No, I didn't take dance classes, really. I just, you know, besides, I mean, my dance training was I wanted to be a boy band when I was in high school, so I, like, emulated all NSYNC.
Copied all their music videos.
Yes, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, you know. But that was all the dance I did, so... There's still moments where I laugh about the shows I've done.
And now Frankie was mentioning earlier that you've been doing some cabaret concerts.
Yeah.
Is that something that you find like helps you have control over your creativity in between shows?
Yeah, it's. I feel like with a lot of the shows I've done, I love to sing. But some being a pop singer, I still haven't had I don't get the chance to sing what I. Like innately love to sing, which is just pop music.
Yeah.
And so doing these cabarets and concerts, I get to kind of sing the songs I want to sing, the songs that really kind of match my soul. And you just get to show a piece of really who you are, you know? Versus in the musicals, I feel like I take myself and play a part. But these concerts, you just get to see Ray.
Right. Is there a lot of, do you have to take on a lot of the producer role when you're self-producing a concert?
Yeah, it's like when you do a concert, like you're producing it, you're music directing it. Luckily, we had a great, amazing music director who took on the, like helping us create these mashups and, you know, the song list and help also orchestrate the band. And a lot of it, it's like, you are directing yourself, you are, again, music directing yourself with the songs, you're marketing yourself, mm-hmm. you're selling the tickets. And so it's a good experience to have as an actor because you play so many hats. But I also feel like an actor these days, you're like marketing yourself, like you become your own corporation, especially in the age of social media. Like you're constantly networking. You constantly have like a quote unquote brand of an actor.
Right. Content.
Content. Yeah.
And do you find that useful or like overwhelming?
Both. I find it both useful and overwhelming because especially with shows, with Groundhog Day, we really felt it where we really felt like social media helped us because we had such amazing, wonderful fans that wanted to get kind of close to us and close to the show. So they wanted to see what backstage was like. They wanted to see us in our dressing rooms. And because there was that niche, we decided to like post pictures and show them what backstage was like and actually invite some of them backstage. Also because our show wasn't selling well, we thought it was important to have that fan base. But it ends up being a lot, you know, because you're... How do you juggle being an actor on stage? And then the moment, you know, back then, once you left the door, you were done. Your job was done.
Right.
You could like put your hoodie on, your sunglasses, you know, interact with the fans and then kind of go home. But now there's this whole other world of, hey, this is Ray having a coffee at this, you know, like,
and it's, you know, it's not usually part of your contract, but they're asking you to do it and you want to help the show, but
it's very interesting now, and I still am figuring out how to juggle it. Like, I don't know how you guys do it. I always love asking like other actors and other artists, like, how do you also juggle the... Some people just completely don't do it, other people embrace it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I haven't been in a position where I've been in like a big show where I need to do it. Mm-hmm. It's more like self-producing the podcast and like when I'm in smaller shows, just, yeah, trying to get the word out to people I know more than that. But Frankie has a public Instagram.
Yeah.
When he was doing Looking, he, like, started doing that.
Yeah.
And so that's always interesting to see the overlap of, like, when he posts stuff about our family and it gets, like, the, you know, the 80 likes from our friends. Yeah. And then he'll post something with a castmate from Looking or, like, a shirtless picture at the gym and he gets like 1,000 likes or whatever.
All those thirsty boys. Oh. Yeah. All those thirsty boys.
I guess the power of the fan base is still out there.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to use it.
And like, even with Looking too, I feel like there's such a fan base that wants to see it come back. Like, but then
Jonathan Groff doesn't have it. He doesn't have any social media. So, and like my classmate from Juilliard, Adam Driver, who's like huge, no social media. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you don't need to have it, but it's a weird,
extra,
like, world.
And then other people use it, like, actually, like, I don't know if you've heard of the show Be More Chill that just opened off Broadway. I love the show. I feel like they had this huge social media outpour of fans that listened to the cast album, that started doing fan art, that started really like creating friends together. Huge. We had so much fan art in Groundhog Day and we loved it, and that kind of gender, we would like post it on our walls.
That's cool because it's still an artistic conversation.
Yeah. And
that's a little different.
It's a good outlet for them too, that kind of bonds both of us, you know, the fans and the actors. But Be More Chill has this huge run now. They sold out their run because
where are they playing?
They're off Broadway. I forgot what theater they are, but I love it. I think the show is fantastic. I love the cast album, but that they were able to like harness the power of social media and the fan base and was able to, you know, create this niche that wanted to see the show. And literally they've sold out their run, and I really predict a Broadway run happening. It's that popular. It's such a different age now. I almost wonder if they teach like social media classes in college.
Well, I just saw Eighth Grade. Have you seen that yet, that movie?
No, I haven't seen it.
And I mean, it's just about, not about any business side of it, but about these 13-year-old kids in eighth grade and how much social media is a part of their lives. The way they maybe don't interact in school every day, but then interact online immediately afterward.
How interesting.
So, like, when those kids are 19 and out in the workforce, like, it's just, it's all changing.
I worry, because, like, I love the movie WALL-E. And I slowly feel like, are we becoming those people?
It's a scary movie, yeah.
Yeah, and because you'll see too, like as parents, I have a thing where, when I'm with my daughter, I put my phone away unless I need to check text or check the time.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of parents out in playgrounds where the kids like running around and they're just kind of checked out.
Yeah.
And that always just worries me as a parent, because I think it's so important to have that interaction with your child. And Ella, you know, is always like, "Daddy, did it come?" And I wanna push her on the swings, and I wanna, you know, watch her climb the jungle gym. Mm-hmm. And I'll see parents, like even at our local playground, that will push their child with like, but the phone is in their hand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what's that doing to the next generation?
And there are those moments where you're like, oh, I need to return these emails.
Like, yeah.
I can do that now. But I've Frankie and I have definitely already talked about that. Like,
yeah,
we use our phones a lot right now because we can, and it's just the two of us. But
and like, we have to.
Be conscious of it.
We try like if one dad needs to email or text, we're like, okay, great. So now Ella has my full attention now. Like, you know, we'll like pass it off. So like both of us aren't on our phones, and she's just kind of like by herself.
Well, even my sister-in-law has expressed to me, like, she's an avid reader, and she wants to model that for her kids, but she's like switched now to a Kindle, and she's like, well, how do I, like, I don't know if they understand yet. They see me on a tablet.
Yeah.
When actually, like, I'm doing this thing that is positive and I want them to emulate. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's tricky. And it's funny because I remember being like, I'm never going to show Ella, like, a phone and this and that. And then once, like, the only way we could get her to comb her hair was like, okay, we're going to show you Moana on this phone. It was like our last resort. Like, here's Moana.
That's how it happens.
We're like, okay, so she knows once it's like time to brush her hair, like she gets the phone, like, here you go. So that we don't have like screaming banshee sounding like I'm torturing her as I'm like brushing
your
her hair.
Your neighbors are knocking on the door.
Call like child protective services. Like, why is this child screaming for her life? I'm trying to braid her hair. So we've been like guilty of that, but then we always make sure, okay, let's turn phone off and let's, you know, we have Jenga, she loves to color. So we try to, it's a tricky, and you guys will also figure it out. It's like this digital age is really tricky, you know.
Have you found any mentors in your career that have been important to you as you've
moved along? You know, it's like, I feel like the older generation of Asian actors that I've been so lucky to work with. Like when I first worked here, it was like Alan Arellano, Christine Toy Johnson, Frances Jew, who I've worked on, who's in Soft Power and I've worked with a while, Alan Marocca. When I first got here, they like embraced us all and they kind of showed us the ropes. And even to this day, like I called Frances for advice, like before Soft Power, and he was answered it right away. And to see how generous they are with their time, but with their art and what a community they created, like Anne Harada, like has been inspiration to me. And like, I feel like my generation of actors, Asian actors, like Devin Elau and, you know, Ali Ewalt, like, and so we want to pass it down too. We want to embrace like this next generation and, you know, take them in and, you know, help them out and show them what we've learned and hopefully pass the wisdom forward. But they've been kind of like my mentors and my inspiration, and they still are. Like, I still will email them for like advice, you know.
That's so awesome. They've been so supportive.
Super supportive, and they now they are our peers. It's really, really cool, and it's the Asian American community is a very awesome community here in New York. It's so supportive. Like when we go in for like an Asian part or an Asian show, it's never competitive. It's like, what's up, boo? Oh, I have to go in. Oh, but hey, let's go to Banchan after and catch up.
That's the way to do it, because it's so tempting.
Yeah.
When people put you in a box, like, you know, the overwhelming culture is like, you all have to compete for this one role.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing to fall into. Like, there's no reason to be. We're all so different.
And I've gotten that question too, like, what if, like, from other people, like, what if that person gets the part? Well, we're both so different. I would rather them have...
The way I would play that part would be completely different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sound different. I move different. I act different. So great. If they get the part, that's fantastic. I feel like we should support each other. You know, that's why when Crazy Rich Asians comes out, we're all going to go see it instead of...
It's coming out like this
week. Like this week, yeah. Right? I'm so excited. You know?
It's based on a book, right?
Yeah, it's based on a book. I haven't read the book either. I feel like I don't get a chance to read a lot these days. Unless it's like Harry Potter that just lets me escape for a little while. Yeah, I should read it, but...
That's great. I'm glad everyone's so supportive of each other.
Yeah.
Are there any lessons that you've learned in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to share with me? Could be a small thing.
You know, it's a big lesson I've learned, and I'm so excited to like share this, especially with y'all, is that like family comes first. Mm-hmm. Family comes first, and to see how fast my daughter grows, and I don't want to miss any part of it. Like even being away in Los Angeles for 2 months, I came back and she had grown exponentially. I was like, who is this child?
Right.
I didn't want to miss it. And the business will always be there, you know? So,
it definitely marks time in a different way when you have a little kid around.
Yeah. If I took a 5-year break from the business, I could come back. Things would be the same. You know, I could go in for the same type of parts and same musicals. But if I took a break from my child for 5 years, they would be a completely different person. I would have missed out on 5 years of these memories and myself growing. And so it's always like family comes first. I think, you know, there's something that I'm learning too, is like, because I've done a lot of music theater, and it's sometimes hard because in this business you get labeled into certain categories. And so I know these days I've been trying to, you know, again, do more plays, try and get up for more TV.
Yeah, I saw you've been doing a bunch of TV stuff. That's great.
Yeah, it's been really good. And I have a film coming out that I did, which is like my first film. Ooh. Second or third film that I'm constantly learning about. And it's also constantly learning how to evolve your career. You know, I feel like music theater has been so wonderful. I'm so excited to now expand.
Right.
You know.
And not put yourself in that box.
Yeah, not put myself. And like, it's easy to be comfortable and, you know, to just keep doing the same projects. But I also am at a place now where I kind of want to challenge myself. You know, I don't want to, I think I know what to do as an ensemble member in a musical, but I want to continue growing. And part of that is like, okay, let's try and do plays. Let's try and do more on camera stuff. Let's try and do voiceover.
That's awesome.
And as scary as it is. But
what do you have to lose? You can always do another ensemble part if you need to. Like,
yeah. And I love doing ensemble parts. Like, I think the ensemble's the backbone of theater. But it's also, as an artist, I want to make sure that I continue to grow, and there's a hunger to like continue learning. And yeah, that's a big lesson I've learned. Always try and learn. and always try to be nice. Oh my gosh. Like, actually, there's two lessons I've learned, not to ramble.
Tell me. I want all the lessons.
Actually, yeah, recently, this is what I've learned, is that like actors, I think, are such resilient beings, and we want to, not people please, but you know what I mean? We want to make sure that everyone's okay, everyone's happy. We want to not like be too much of divas. But there are moments recently that I've learned where I'm like, I've learned to like put my foot down, or learn to like stand up for myself and my fellow actors whenever there's like a safety issue, or you whenever I feel like we might be taken advantage of. Like, I've learned in a way to also like have that voice, you know.
That's
to
awesome.
to stand up for us.
Right, and that doesn't have to be, doesn't mean that you're being a dick, you know.
Yeah, I'm not being a dick or a diva.
I'm someone who shies away from confrontation, but sometimes it's okay.
It's okay.
Speak up for yourself.
Yeah, if I see a fellow actor, like, a safety issue happening, like, I'm going to, like, raise my hand and be like, hey, that's not cool, that's not safe. And and I think I've people know how I work, and they realize that I don't like being dramatic. And so I hope they'll take that with respect. But, yeah, that's something I learned, too. Like, how to kind of stand up more for yourself as an actor.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
If you are having a day where you're, like, in the dark place and feeling uninspired or whatever it is, are there any concrete things that you reach for again and again, like a book or an album you listen to, or like a place you go or anything like that?
I will actually go to the movie theater.
I love going to the movies.
Yes. I like going by myself.
Me too.
You too.
Yeah.
And you live so close to Kaufman Astoria.
It's dangerous.
Thanks, MoviePass.
If you don't self-destruct in the next week.
Please stay. I like you.
Yeah.
It's so nice. Like, I like, I'm such a visual person. And to watch, like, it like reinvigorates me to see just kind of like other people working on screen, but also just to have my focus in a movie theater. And
you're not multitasking. Like, you're not on your phone too. Or
you can almost
whatever.
Turn your phone off for like an hour and a half and not be like fully available. So that's where I will go when I'm in that like uninspired kind of dark place. I need to kind of be reinvigorated. And it'll like depend on what movie I want to see. Like the last time, I feel like I might have seen Mission Impossible just because I wanted to see a Henry Cavill, my like super movie crush that I think is amazing. But B, I wanted to see like action because I always wanted to be like an action star.
So. Frankie just saw it. I was like, it's okay. I'll stay home.
It's incredible. Tom Cruise is such a badass. I'm like, I can't believe he actually like helicoptered himself. It's crazy.
Oh my God. How old is he now?
Is he in his 50s?
I guess he started out so young. He's not as old as I think he is.
Yeah, I always go like younger because I don't ever want to like say like I never want to like, you know, must be in his like mid-50s. But he looks great. He jumped over a roof. He did all this amazing, wonderful, crazy stuff. And also like I think to watch films and to be like, hey, hopefully maybe that could be me one day. It just like reinvigorates me, you know.
The last question is, have you seen anything recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Oh, you know, I just saw Head Over Heels.
I've been hearing that's good.
It's so fun.
I don't really know anything about it, but
it's the music of the Go-Go's.
Okay.
To I don't know if this was a play. I'm so horrible. Arcadia? Is Arcadia?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, see, I'm the worst theater person ever.
No. It's a Tom Stoppard play. It's hard to get through.
Oh, it was like in verse. So I don't know if they took it and like made it in verse, but it's...
Yeah, he's kind of a poetic writer.
Okay, maybe that's what they did. And then they like put... It felt like a Shakespeare play.
But with the Go-Go's?
With the music of the Go-Go's.
Oh.
And so...
Interesting.
It's really cool because they're like talking in verse. It's like set and like there's all this like, you know, there's like a character in drag. There's a non-binary oracle played by Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race. And it's really fun. It's about love. But then they'll bust out and like, you know, ooh, heaven is a place on earth. You know?
That sounds awesome.
And it's really cool. And I had a great time. And it's always hard with musicals where it's hard to know which ones are, you know, selling the tickets and this and that. And I know that they were in a harder place. So I wanted to go support them and support my friends in it. And I had the best time. It was so much fun. So go.
Maybe we can go see it before the baby gets here.
Yeah. It's a fun date night. It's a fun date night show. I'm trying to think of the last movie I saw. Oh, A Quiet Place.
Oh God. That one I'm not seeing until after I have the baby. Cause I've heard about that.
Yes. Don't
scene.
Watch it when you're about to have a child. Maybe. Oh God.
Frankie saw it. He loved it.
What did Frankie think, especially being about to be a dad?
He liked it, but I was like, I know that she gives birth silently, and I don't need to see that.
Yeah, you know, and like, there's just the beginning of the movie too. It's just you might want to watch that maybe a couple years from now, because you're gonna want to lock everything. You're gonna want to have a backpack leash for your kid, it's just like, and toys that don't make noise.
Yes, we already want that. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. This was so much fun.
Thanks for having me. This is great. This was like so nice to like talk and chat.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of the Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.